Hey, this is Rob. This is episode 128 of the Folly Coffee Podcast. Let's get it brewing. All right. The podcast episode, long time coming. I love to say that when I have a plan on my calendar, it happens. And then, of course, most of them don't. And so we've had this podcast planned for a long time, finally able to on the busy schedule. I'm here with Peter Behan of, as you probably know by now, Saturday Dumpling Club.
Happy to be here, man. I'm
very excited to have you on because I figured out about Saturday Dumpling Club just on Instagram. And it was weird. It's that weird phenomenon that once you notice something, you feel like you see it everywhere. And then you're going, has it always been this way? Or is it blowing up right now? Because it seemed like the second I found it on Instagram, that it was just absolutely everywhere. And this is the first time we've sat down and talked. So I'm really excited to learn about your business. For those of you who are listening, Saturday Dumpling Club is what I think is a brilliant business model. It is a weekly pickup where you create dumplings and other foods that people come to you, place their order ahead of time. You put it up on Wednesday. Yes. It sells out immediately, almost seemingly every time. And then they come pick up on Saturday. But I want to hear how you started the business in the first place, because I know very little about you, and I did no research because I wanted to learn directly from you, because I think it's a really cool business how you're doing it.
Sure. Thanks, man. We started a year and a half ago, almost a year and a half ago, 2021 March. It was right after Chinese New Year. We were in Milwaukee. My brother lives there. The whole fam was there. It's a little pandemic get together. And we make dumplings traditionally for Chinese New Year. And we were making them, and I was looking at my wife, Linda, and I was like, you know, we can probably, like, sell these. We don't have anything going on, you know. Let's just try selling these and making them at home. And she was like, okay. So we sat my mom down, and we were like, we want to make, like, four or five different dumplings. And she's like, why? And we just want to eat these, and we want to make them at home. And we are going to weigh out all the ingredients as you're making them. And so we did that, and she was super skeptical. We came home, stole all her recipes, and and then put it up on our Instagram. This was maybe like a Wednesday or a Thursday. Had nothing to do. We were just at home. And then These are super weird. listening to myself, like, the feedback is super awkward.
Listening in the headphones is an awkward thing.
Yeah, and anyways, so we come back, stole my mom's recipes, dough recipe, four or five flavors. We were in my kitchen at home at the condo, and we started banging these out. Put it on Instagram. I had maybe like 300 followers. Like, just friends. And family.
When you say our Instagram, you mean just, like, your personal Instagram?
No Saturday Dumpling Club. It was just our personal, like, my personal Instagram. 300 people. I didn't think anything was going to move, really. But I guess, you know, pandemic, and people were just kind of, like, sick of, like, eating at home, and no restaurants are open, and sold maybe, like, 40 orders. And I did the math, and I was like, 40 orders, 40 times, like, 12. Holy shit, that's, like, 500 dumplings that I have to, like, make that I haven't made yet. Stayed up all night Thursday, Friday, froze them in like a chest freezer, and got them out Saturday to friends. And then that just kind of like snowballed, and it just kept on going. That's kind of a origin story. You know, we had a bunch of time. Everybody was kind of sick of cooking at home. Dumplings are a labor of love, and you know, we just wanted to pass that love on. We had nothing but time on our hands. So that's kind of how it started.
It's like the ultimate example is, I've referenced it before on here, that when I started Folly, like, of course, all of our first orders were friends and family. And it gave me this feeling that's like, oh, I'm faking it so hard. Like, this isn't even a real thing because it's just friends and family. But then you go back with perspective and you're like, yeah, but if your friends and family like it, they're going to be your absolute best customers.
Oh, yeah.
So at this point, did you have like your cottage food license? Was this something so you got your cottage food license?
Yes, we did.
And so
look right there, but
On and then the wink comes, but it's just friends and family. I'm just making food for people, and they're paying me for the ingredients.
Yeah, and it was so nice the first couple of weeks, because it was a chance to A, meet new people, right, and then B, have an excuse to see old friends, because everybody was coming out. They were coming to our condo. We were doing drops out of the condo, like the association garage. And it was super weird. We had like a photo. You kind of drive up this ramp, and we had like a photo on Instagram. It was like, drive up here, and it was like kind of creepy for like people that didn't know. And but you would just like meet me in the garage, covered garage. It was dead of winter, maybe like 0 degrees outside, and I was just out there with my coolers and giving people dumplings. But you know, it was good, because we were chatting up like old friends, and then they were introducing us to their friends and new people, and we were like sharing food. So those first couple of weeks, once we saw like new names kind of DM us, that was like, ah, this is kind of cool, you know, this might have legs.
And at this point, did you have a plan? Like, because I imagine when those first flux of orders. So are you thinking when these orders for 500 dumplings come in, are you now starting to picture, oh, this could be a real business? Or are you like,
oh, no way.
You're thinking like maybe, oh, this is a one-time thing. My friends and family, you know, it's just the time of the year with the pandemic going on that people are just interested in this one timer. What are your thoughts as you're making these 500 dumplings?
I mean, I didn't think it was going to be like a huge thing, but I thought like, yeah, we could do this on maybe like a monthly basis, maybe a weekly basis, just to keep it as a side hustle, you know, make enough for a vacation or something while I look for real work. No, never in a million years did I think it would grow to what it is now. So, you know, in the beginning, it was just something fun to do, a chance to feed people, which me and Linda love, and then using it as an excuse to see friends. But now it's kind of bonkers right now.
At what point did that shift? Because obviously now you've got the brand Saturday Dumpling Club. You've got the, I went to go pick up my order. Yeah. You've got this long line going there. I wanted to say hi, but I was like, he's too busy. I'm just going to pick this up.
I wanted to say hi to you, but I was like, look at that dude. Like, I was like, is that the Folly? Is that Rob from Folly? I was like, no, is he actually like that big?
I don't know what that is. I get that a lot in person, that people go, you're huge. Like, you're way bigger than I thought. And I'm like, how am I positioning the camera that everyone thinks I'm like 5'8 or something? But anyway, what was that tipping point? And actually, I want to ask for this first order, because like 500 dumplings, if someone was like, all right, Rob, you have to make 500 dumplings, I'm like, will the grocery store have enough for me to be able to do this? Or where did you even go when you're starting to make this volume of orders?
Costco Business Center.
Ah.
Costco Business Center, Restaurant Depot. Still go to those places frequently. And just like a KitchenAid mixer. We weren't buying ground pork or ground beef. We were grinding it ourselves with just like a little KitchenAid stand mixer and that little plastic meat grinder attachment. I think we went through like two of those before we got like a nice like actual commercial meat grinder. But yeah, it was just those two stores, and then operating out of our condo kitchen.
So the first week happens, 500 dumplings, 40 orders for 12. Do you go, let's do this again next week? Or are you like, what is happening?
Yeah. And then, I mean, the follower count just like kept on climbing, and we were seeing like new people come through, people DMing. The switch came when I realized like we needed like a website, like an actual website, because we were still fielding all these orders through DMs.
Yeah.
And at 10 a.m., things would open, DMs would come rushing in, and then we would have to set up some kind of a cutoff, where then we would have to DM all these people back that couldn't get their orders, like, oh, I'm so sorry, maybe next week, like, you know, let me take down your name. And then it just got to be like a 2-hour process just saying sorry to like 200 people. So then we had to switch to like a Shopify account, and that just kind of like made orders and inventory handling like a lot easier. So then at least people can see like, oh, it's sold out now, and then they'll just wait. But I guess like the fourth or fifth week, you know, when we made that, when we made that switch, and it just became kind of like a light bulb moment, like where, you know, maybe we can do this like full time, or like I could do this full time. Linda was still working, I think, at Polaris Corporate and then at Aveda Corporate, doing social media. So she was always kind of holding down the fort while I was kind of like playing Dumpling Man.
It's a great superhero.
Yeah. No, maybe like the first month or the first month and a half, you know, it was just kind of like grassroots and really like low tech. But then once we got a website, it kind of made it like real.
And did you come up with the name and the branding and everything before launching the website, or how did you go along this process?
Yeah. I mean, we kept the Saturday thing going for the first couple of weeks. I wanted to call it Saturday Night Dumplings and have it like Saturday Night Fever kind of a vibe. Mm-hmm. And then Linda was like, no, don't do that. Just call it like Saturday Dumpling Club. Everybody likes a club. It's a cute name. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. She does all the branding stuff. Like, all the colors, really all the branding. I can't take zero credit. Yeah. I'm terrible with colors.
So you have the dream team there. It's someone with like branding. I mean, the fonts, the branding, everything's really cool. Yeah. It's clean. And like when I saw it, I was, because there are certain things about branding that sometimes you see a business and the branding, you just go, oh, this is a professional business. This is a real thing. And I mean this in the best way possible, because I've felt this way for years with Folly that I go, I'm faking it so hard. But the branding needs to make it so that if new people find it, they just go, this is real.
Oh, yeah.
How long until you weren't out of your condo? And so you launched the website. You're still kind of doing pickups at the condo. Yeah. Because it seems to me now that, like, this thing has so much momentum and the way it sells out so quickly that there's, like, this tipping point of, like, okay, we're doing this thing out of the house. It's a side hustle to you're like, this could be full time. And all of a sudden you got to start planning and thinking about these things and licensing. So I'm curious how that whole process went along for you.
I mean, I think after about 2 months of operating at the condo, we started looking for space, like commissary space.
Yeah. And was the condo cool with you being out of there, or did you kind of just keep it hush?
No, absolutely not. after 3 months, I mean, we moved into our commissary because our association sent us an email and said, you got to stop selling dumplings out of the garage. They sent us not like a cease and desist, but the association manager emailed us directly and said, we love your dumplings. We love the branding, but you have to stop selling them out of the garage. Cause we had so many people coming through, like people walking up, people driving up, people not knowing like where to park. And it was just causing like pandemonium between like 10 and 1 PM on Saturdays, every Saturday, where like a couple of neighbors were coming down. It's like, what are you doing here? It was like, oh, we're selling dumplings. I was, oh, that's kind of cool. And like, I don't know if they're like going back to the association, just like, hey, you know what's going on right now?
Yeah.
Right now. We had to get out of there, moved into, Bull's Horn, as our commissary kitchen and kind of drop site in, gosh, I want to say like July, and then did Bull's Horn from like July until November, until we kind of grew out of that kitchen. But yeah, Doug Flicker was one of the kind of earlier people to find us on Instagram. He has this thing where he watches motorcycle racing and eats dumplings, you know. to our luck. And
it's the dream.
Yeah. And then he comes, finds us. And I hit him up on DMs, and he was like, yeah, I've got some space, you know, you can use the freezers downstairs. And so, yeah, that was our first commissary kitchen. And then, you know, restaurant license, which we still have, right now. So we're like technically operating as like a, as a restaurant. Now, you know, we've been in Dots Gray in North Minneapolis, our current commissary kitchen, for how many months? Like four or five months.
Now, it sounds like no background in dumpling making outside of this is what you
outside
did
of
with
a
the
home cook?
Outside no. of yeah, yeah, outside of a home yeah. cook. Yeah. What was this? Did it come easy to you because you kind of grew up making them, or you
a
like?
Little
you, bit. Because to me, it's like 500 and just even just thinking about inventory management and trying to find purchasing and the way the supply chain has been over the past couple of years. Yeah. What was that like? Because I'm always curious. There's the customer facing side that it's like Saturday Dumpling Club.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope I get one this week. And you pick up, it's ready for you frozen. What's the behind the scenes on a weekly process of getting the ingredients, making it? Because it's done at such a scale now that I would have to imagine that like the learning curve had to have been pretty steep.
Yeah, I mean, there were some choke points in the beginning. Inventory management and kind of like setting up kind of systems were all always an issue. Finding enough product, like putting out... The problem comes when we put out the flavors on Tuesday and we sell on Saturday. So it's kind of playing catch up for most of the week, you know, because not all the dumplings are made by Wednesday. So I don't know how many orders, at least in the beginning, that mm-hmm. we were supposed to make by Saturday. So it was always Thursday, Friday was kind of a mad dash to the finish. But now I'm, you know, we have kind of menus planned out ahead of time. On Sunday, we post the menu on like Monday or Tuesday, and we kind of have a rough idea of how many dumplings we're making on any given week. And you know, we've done it so many weeks now where like I know like how many dumplings the team can make. And so it's about, I don't know, setting very like low expectations, you know. The whole point of this thing was not to like stress me or Linda out, even though, you know, it's pretty stressful week to week sometimes, but it's all right now. In the beginning it was definitely like touch and go. There was a couple of weeks where there were some pretty late nights and a couple of days where we were worried, like, are the dumplings going to freeze overnight? And, like, are they going to be, like, you know, okay to pack in the morning?
Because I'm looking at your business model. I get very jealous. Because as I told you just as I walked, I just got back from, like, delivering cold brew all morning. Yeah. And obviously Folly and Filterra are wholesale businesses. So yeah. It's getting things to the customer, trying to do inventory management, predicting what they're going to sell on a given week.
Yeah.
And what you've done here is you've created, like... You've built a brand to the point where you're like, we're likely going to sell out of everything. So it's basically, how much are we comfortable making to where it's going to sell out?
Yeah.
And then also, you're going to come to us to pick it up. And you're going to be happy to do it because this is just how the business has always been set up. If I tried to today, being like, hey, I'm going to shift my business model, customers, why don't you just come on by the roasters to pick up your order every week? They'd be like, no, we're switching suppliers. This is not how the business has been or done. And I've even referenced it to other people that are starting new businesses,
yeah.
especially in food and beverage, because I'm like, if you can do it that way and create a system from the start, it makes life so much easier. Now, with the name Saturday Dumpling Club, obviously born out of just how you were doing it at the beginning, yeah. did you make that name going, this is how we always want to do it? Or has the growth of it opened? Because one of the toughest things about business is like when you're having success is choosing what not to do.
Yeah.
Because the wrong choice on choosing to go a path or choosing a new way of selling mm-hmm. can hinder what the existing success you've had. And so when you have that name, is this something that you go, this is how I always want to do it? Or is that something that's potentially shifted in your mind?
I think so for the most part. I mean, in the beginning, like you said, we set it up to make it easy for us. Because there were a couple of pandemic businesses that did like drop-offs and delivery. And when I saw how many orders were coming in and I didn't want to eat up more time than I was like, you know, willing to invest into driving around. I don't know where these orders are coming from. It just didn't seem like a good model for like my time and Linda's time. So we said, you know what, we're going to make this not difficult, but we're going to make this easy on us. And then whoever comes, comes. If you want dumplings, if you want good dumplings, you're going to drive for food. You know, if you don't, that's fine too. And luckily enough, people, you know, did where we could like kind of grow this thing. Sorry, what was your original question?
It's kind of the question of like, is this how you, at the beginning, it's like, this is how we're doing it now.
Oh,
but now
yeah,
with the
yeah.
success you've had, is that name something that you go, this is always how we're going to do it and we want to continue building this way?
Yeah, I think so. The kind of like direct consumer, like once a week pickup is great. You know, it gives us enough time to think about things, to figure out inventory and go through like a round of production and develop new recipes and then have time for like, you know, hanging out or doing things like this. When we kind of think about the future, we've been kind of dipping our toes into different things that we might think the business can grow into. We've had a couple of pop-ups. We've been talking about wholesaling to different locations, something that I'd love to talk to you about. it's always been, you know, not a full, like, chips into the middle of the table kind of a deal, but just kind of seeing what might work, what might not. You know, pop-ups, I think we're going to do more in the summer just because people are, you know, it's patio season, it's lake season. People are less likely to come pick up frozen dumplings just to drive them home and then go out again.
Yeah.
You know, so having a destination where we have cooked food makes a lot of sense, especially now everybody thinks the pandemic is over, you know. And so that would probably make sense for us during the summer. And we're going to try to do little tests here and there and see what kind of shakes out and what makes sense for us and what makes sense financially and what makes sense like from a time perspective. And now that we have like a bigger commissary kitchen, it kind of opens those doors for those types of options. But I think ultimately what we would like to do is have, you know, a really good home-based presence in Minneapolis and then try to get our dumplings through either a direct-to-consumer fulfillment model or a wholesale model out to more people and just kind of try to expand.
Now, from a marketing perspective, this is I am obsessed with brands where I go, well, I just know it. You go, how? Yeah. I don't know. It popped up on Instagram and you see other people. You're like, yeah, people just know it. I don't know. That to me is the sign of a great brand where you're not like, oh, I saw an advertisement on TV. That's how I'm aware of it. Or like the paid advertising or things like that. Yeah. So the marketing of Saturday Dumpling Club, has it been just completely through Instagram? Is the marketing outside of like the branding and the effort you put in to create a really cool brand, is marketing even something you think about a lot outside of just keeping up to date on Instagram and updating people? What forms of marketing are you consciously like thinking this is how we're going to get the word out to people?
For the most part, especially in the beginning, it was all Instagram. It was all just through word of mouth, talking with friends that owned restaurants, going, doing staff meals, and just kind of growing organically. We still haven't put any paid advertising behind any of our marketing efforts. You know, it's mostly through friends, families, strangers that like really good food. You know, doing things like this. The collabs have been a really great way to capture different demos from different restaurants, different groups of people from all walks of life, just to kind of like take a filling from, say, Brasa or Yia, put it in a dumpling, and then just collaborate that way, has been really great. And we've been meeting, you know, tons of awesome people that way. And people seem to dig it. We'll keep doing more of those.
Were the collabs something that you went out and said, hey, do you want to collab with us on one of these? Or how did you start to start to think about doing collaborations? Because it makes a lot of sense naturally that you're like, you can do really cool fillings and unique things with like these really talented pool of chefs and people we have in the Twin Cities. How did the collabs come to be in the first place?
Our first collaboration was with Gustavo of Nixta. And I think either he DM'd me or we DM'd him. And we said like, you want to do a birria dumpling? You know, it made a lot of sense just taking the shredded lamb, putting it in a dumpling, having, you know, like the jus as the dipper, the consomme. And he was like, yeah, hell yeah, let's do it. So he prepared the filling, brought it to us, and then we wrapped it up and people went nuts over it.
Because what's so cool about like this, the dumplings in general is like, such a collab friendly thing. Sometimes you see collabs, chef collabs, and you're like, is it really a collab or is it just like you're cooking together or how does that really work? But with a dumpling, you're like, no, it's literally taking what this business does and like putting a spin that this chef is creating what's going inside it.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom like freaked out. She had no idea what the hell it was. It's like, what is this stuff? Like, this isn't a dumpling. Like, what are you doing? And you're charging what for it? Like, she was not on board.
Yeah, what are her thoughts through this whole thing? Because at the beginning, you kind of reference like, oh, we just want to make dumplings now. And yeah. So sounds like you didn't really even tell her, hey, we're going to try to start selling these and make some money off these. What have her thoughts been as grown to be what it is?
I hope she's proud of what we've created. I know she likes it when people kind of like eat dumplings, eat the food, and kind of like post about it. And we always show her like people's stories and stuff of eating the dumplings, and also like this past week the zhongzi, the zzs that we made, like the sticky rice, that was all her. We had her in the kitchen making all those, because I have no idea what I'm doing around those. But I think she is she's curious as to like how many people actually like dumplings and actually like having them, you know, just in their house and then eating them on a regular basis. I think she's really shocked at how many people are eating them, and she doesn't understand the collaborations because it's like a mac and cheese dumpling or a cheeseburger dumpling, which we haven't done. But, you know, in her head, it's just like, what the hell are you putting inside a dumpling? This isn't a dumpling. I would never eat this. I would never buy this. But then she sees them flying off the shelves, and she's, you know, I think she's come around a little bit. So she's, you know, sometimes she'll give me a call and she's like, what about if you did this? Or like, I saw this on YouTube. Like, what if you put this in a dumpling? I'm like, okay. She's like kind of coming around.
When you start getting the parents' suggestions, well, what if you do this? Even if you're like, probably not. Yeah, but you're like,
yeah, like, oh yeah, okay, I'll write that down. Thanks, Mom.
Probably not, but also I'm very happy that you're excited about it. Yeah. With dumplings being the thing, obviously you sell and you're making them. What even gave you the first thought that maybe people will buy these? Because let's take like the devil's advocate here, where somebody's like, well, I could go to the grocery store and buy frozen dumplings for a fraction of the cost.
Oh, yeah.
And so what kind of was that light bulb moment where you're like, I bet we could sell these?
First couple of weeks when it just kept on going, and the names on the list were all strangers, you know?
And so the first batch,
it wasn't just like just friends.
Yeah.
You know?
So the first batch was almost just like, hey, we enjoy making these. They're great. Let's almost like share them with friends, and like we can make a little money off it, but let's share them with friends. And that's an interesting insight into like why some businesses work, in my opinion, is sometimes you meet someone and they're like, I identified a category that I think is being underserved. And if I can find a co-packer that can make a recipe that's good enough, then I think I can really attack this market. But then you meet someone like yourself and you're like, family makes really good dumplings.
Yeah. I like them.
I like them. I thought my friends and family would like them. Turns out they're telling everyone. Yeah. And just hearing like no paid marketing is such a testament to that, because the most valuable marketing is by far word of mouth. And it's not even close. Yeah. If you have a friend tell you you need to get this, you are so much more likely than if you see an enticing ad. 100%. Because even an ad, you go, oh, I like dumplings. And you swipe, oh, I have to go pick it up. It's this much. But if a friend's like, it's worth the drive, it's worth the money, it's totally worth it when you eat it. And 100%. Everyone I talked to about it was like, oh, they are dope. Like, these dumplings are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, to that effect, we went to like the subject matter experts in like restaurants, you know, people that we trust with reviews. And if, you know, a restaurateur that you go to, or like a restaurant that you go to, tells you, oh, you need to try this at this restaurant, you're more likely to do that, you know, versus a friend telling you that may or may not know food, right? So if like Yia is telling me you need to go here for skewers, I'm going there for skewers, right? So we wanted to eat at all these restaurants. So what we did, we just started DMing places and just doing staff meals for them, not trying to get them to like post or do anything, just to meet the people behind the food. That was super fun, just doing staff meals. And we had this thing called No Dumplings Left Behind, because
I saw that, which was like, from a business, if you're looking at it strictly business, why don't you explain it first? Because there's like so many reasons I love this.
Yeah, there were, you know, we have these kind of pickup windows. People forget, or people have life events where, you know, then we roll them over to the following week, or try to figure something out. But sometimes, you know, like people just forget, or they don't come, you know. And so instead of putting those dumplings back in inventory and kind of making double money off of it, which we thought was kind of weird. We started this thing called No Dumplings Left Behind, where we were donating them to like industry friends or restaurants or people that were making cool shit around town. And then that just kind of took off too. And we're still doing that kind of week to week. We're posting about it less, but you know, it's always good to kind of take what you have and just brighten somebody's day.
Cause I'm noticing this theme with you in Saturday Dumpling Club. That's like, what is the business model? It's like, well, let's just do cool shit. And then, then the marketing side is like, oh, that worked from a marketing perspective. Cause No Dumplings Left Behind is like, one of the tough things when you're early in a business is like, I think this tastes great. Our existing customers seem to like it, but like, what about people that really know what they're talking about? Like, does it break that barrier of like somebody who's had a lot of different types of food or cooks himself? What would they think about it? So No Dumplings Left Behind is like this awesome way to be like, hey, we had extra. We don't want them to go to waste. We think what you're doing is cool. And so it's like props to you. But then also you're getting your dumplings in the hands and mouths of people that really know what you're talking about.
Sure.
And as you and I probably both know, restaurant and food and beverage industry people will not hold punches on if something's good or not. And they'll tell you, not out of like meanness or anything, just like most of the time, like, hey, if you did this or that, it might be better. But if someone's like, dude, these are awesome.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, we've really got something here.
Or if they don't say anything, I mean, that's
when it's really
enough,
bad.
Right?
I'd rather have you tell me what's wrong with it. If I'm just getting it, it's good. No, seriously.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, that's pretty.
Keep up the good work. It's neat. What you're doing over there is really neat.
Yeah. We had that happen with our Beyond Meat. We have these vegetarian dumplings that are a pain in the ass to wrap because they're so loose. It's not like meat where it's kind of like forms a meatball, you know, really easily. It's just loose vegetables. And so it's super hard to wrap. It's a pain in the ass. And I thought, well, maybe if we put like Beyond Meat or Impossible Meat inside with our like vegetarian filling, it would be the best of both worlds, right? Like we can wrap it, more people can get it, and it was just crickets. We sold some, and it was just crickets as far as like who's eating them. Nobody was posting about it. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, heard.
That's I always say if you get a positive review on anything, whether in person or online or whatever, that means you crushed it. But people are much more likely, in my opinion, to share a positive review. Some people have altering opinions that some people just love to shit post and be like, this is why this sucks. But that's more for Yelp. But like if someone is contacting you directly or leaving a review directly and it's negative, I go, there's probably a lot more people that feel this way but just didn't want to be mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I would prefer you just tell me in person so it doesn't affect the reviewers on our website. But either way, if we're getting a negative review, it's probably a lot more people feel that way. So crickets on something, you almost just have to kind of assume it was average or bad.
Yeah, we just never did it again. And we figured like it was like people have like differing views about plant-based, right? Like people like the Beyond and Impossible Meat or people just hate it, right? So like bringing vegetables and then Beyond Meat together, we were just kind of making both sides unhappy.
Somebody that wants the all vegetarian is like, why did you ruin this? And then somebody that wants the Impossible Meat is like, I don't want all the veggies and then I eat this because I want the meat feeling.
So
as you're doing pop-ups, I'm just like trying to the momentum you've gained and with the collabs you've been doing and the just all this really the heat you seem to have around your business. Is it because of the way it was started and everything that, because it seems to me when I speak to other people that might be in your situation, there's like this intense anxiety that sometimes as things are going really well, it's like, oh my, what do I do next? Is the way you started the business and just how you've always handled it and the role it's played in your life is like, as long as it's good for me, we're going to keep it going. Or do you get any of that feeling or of like, I don't know if you call it anxiety or like, oh, the potential opportunities out there that I might be missing by not doing more days or more pickups or this or that. Is that a feeling you have? Or is it just kind of like, because of how it started, it's like, holy shit, we're actually like what we're doing now is insane.
I mean, a little bit of both. You always want to like step back and kind of appreciate what you've built and how far you've come. But you know, I'd be lying if I said I'm not like always waiting for the other shoe to drop. Just one day people are like, okay, and enough with the dumpling. Got it. But no, it's been steady enough to a point where, you know, it's not on cruise control, but we have enough people and enough systems in place where we can start thinking about the next steps, which has been nice. You know, we're not trying to grow super, super fast, yeah, or start looking for investors and growing like crazy.
Smart.
But you know, we're trying to strategically think about the next steps. We're kind of at this point where we're kind of faced with a couple different opportunities. In the beginning, it was just, how many dumplings can we sell? How many can we make? Mm. Who can make dumplings out there? How do we hire, you know? And now it's, do we go wholesale or do we go pop-ups or do we go restaurant? And, you know, do we stay here? Do we... It's a lot of those questions, which for me, it's not as fun to think about. I like to say Linda is front of the house, back of the house. So really she should be here talking to you and not me. I like to be in the kitchen kind of doing R&D, doing a lot of prep, doing, you know, different flavor combinations and things like that. Working with, different collaborators kind of gives me a lot of joy and kind of a spark for the next thing. The Saturday morning drops were hell on me. Not that I don't like seeing all of our customers, but after a full week of production, seeing 200-300 people, and I mean it's amazing. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing seeing how happy people are to come pick up dumplings, but I'm an introvert at heart, so after, you know, all of that social interaction, I was just like, Linda, you gotta like leave me alone. I just want to be in like a little dark room to recharge. So it's nice now that we kind of have our roles defined. Linda has her crew in the front Saturday. Everybody's super bubbly and it's great. And then I'm in the back just chopping vegetables and I'm happy as a clam.
Yeah. And I totally relate to that because it's hard to explain to someone that it's like, it can be exhausting and you have a relatively similar conversation 100-200 times in a row and it's out of pure excitement and you don't want to hate on that, but you're like,
no,
I don't know how to say this, but I've had this conversation already 50 times today. Yeah. And I'm glad you're excited, but like, yeah, thank you for your order, but it is hard to describe.
You have to like muster up that like motivation and strength because it's the first time for somebody.
Yeah.
Either drinking coffee or eating dumplings, exactly. And you can't be an asshole, you know. Yeah. You don't want to be an asshole, but sometimes your batteries are just at like a minimum, right?
Yeah.
So it's great having people that love that kind of stuff now representing the brand and kind of being the face of Saturday Dumpling Club on Saturdays with Linda in the front. And then I can pop out and say hi to a couple of the regulars, say hi to some new people, which has been great. But I can kind of pick and choose those times now. But yeah, I mean, to your original question, it's steady to a point where, you know, we have some time to think about the next steps, which, you know, we're pretty lucky in that sense.
Yeah, when you can make business decisions with no sense of urgency, so when you have like a lack of urgency or like a pure necessity, because that can be where decisions are made that maybe you go, I don't know if this is right, but like we need to do it, either whether it's a financial thing or urgency. For me, a lot of the time, the urgency is created in my own head. Yeah. I had to actually address that last year. That's like, stop, take a year, don't place urgency on any decisions. You're going to make smart, way better decisions for a full year. But the way you set up the business is like, the urgency is not there. You're not having customers being like, where's my delivery? What time is this arriving? Even if you're like, we drop it off between this time on Saturday, they'd be like, it's 12:30 and I haven't gotten my order yet. I was going to have it for lunch. How dare you? And you're like, the window said 10 to 2. I'm still well with... These are all things that I speak from experience of the things we've done ourselves. Yeah. But the other thing I really like about your business that actually has literally got me like racking my brain about, is there a thing like this for coffee? Is you've created a weekly routine for people. Mm. you've linked yourself to a specific day. You've linked the drop to a specific time, and it's very limited. If you had pickups every day, there isn't that urgency for the customer.
Yeah.
And you almost like, you want that for the customer, that it's like, it's hard to get a hold of this thing because it is. My first order I placed, I tried to order one thing 30 seconds after it opened, couldn't get it. So I went with my second, my second option.
Yeah.
And that's crazy to see, is that these like 20 orders of a limited release thing are gone in the first 30 seconds, which is so cool to see. But you've created this routine that when people hear Saturday, they're like, either, oh, I need to get in on next week order, or I need to like set my reminder to get my Wednesday at 10 a.m. set. And it's similar to what you've seen. Are you familiar with like A to Z Creamery by Zach? Mm-hmm. It's a very similar thing. I had him on the podcast like early on to talk more about his Instagram, which is where we met. And like, how did you become kind of a foodie and start? And then he's like, oh, I've also started, you know, A to Z Creamery. And it was very, very early stages. And to see what he's built doing that same model, I'm like, there's something behind this combination of something that is really great. Like, you have to have an amazing product for it to work, because if you don't, it just, over time, you're never going to get a repeat customer.
No, no repeat
They're
customers.
Not telling
exactly.
There's no word of mouth, and it's not going to work. So the first step is you have to have an amazing offering. But there's something about this urgency, this excitement.
The scarcity, like, really works to kind of, like, our advantage with, you know, Zach and A to Z and dumplings. It's kind of like... Like friends of ours were talking about how it's kind of like a Nike drop, you know. Like I'm not a sneakerhead, but we have like a bunch of sneakerheads in our lives, and it's like Saturdays at 9 a.m. You know, it's always like these are when like the freshest sneakers are coming out, and you take an L or you take a W, and it either like makes or breaks your day.
Yeah, Houston White from Get Down Coffee called the Kanye drop, that he's like, because he's in fashion, and he's like, we did this limited drop at JCPenney, and because it was limited, they thought it was going to take a couple months. It took like 10 days. And so there's something, but the interesting thing about it is I'm trying to think of like, what is it about that is, I'm wondering if the customer has to kind of know that the reason it's scarce is not by choice, but it's like, this is how many we can make.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much cooler, both with Zach at A to Z, you know, starting in the kitchen like yourself, kind of selling to friends and family, and then all of a sudden, like, in the commissary kitchen, and you're like, the reason we're only selling this many is because this is the most we can make.
Yeah.
And we've done coffees like that online where it's like, we bought one bag of this. Like, if it sells out, it's gone forever.
Yeah.
And those coffees, all of a sudden, people are like, I have to get this now.
I have to have it, yeah. Yeah, it's like a fear of missing out, you know? Like, your friends have it, and you have to have it, too.
And like, the second a customer might potentially sniff out, like, oh, this is planned. You're trying to sell out of these. You want it to be scarce. Yeah. I wonder if it has the same effectiveness. And, like, this is where that combination of, like, authenticity but also good business strategy kind of come together.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that it's like, the way you set up your business, this really cool factor, this excitement, this urgency as just a byproduct of what is just a really authentic story of we can't make more than we're selling this week, so come and get it if you can.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, we try, and I think we do a good job of like being transparent with our customers about, you know, how many we're making, and kind of showing the kitchen and showing the process of making dumplings. And it's like three people in the back. We have one guy now who Isaac is an amazing employee in the fact that he was like an ex-chocolatier and he can actually make dumplings. We went through when we were interviewing for people like back of the house. Like chopping vegetables and prepping, that's super easy. But making actual dumplings is, I guess, super difficult, especially like the way that we make dumplings. And Isaac can do it. So, you know, it's me, him, you know, sometimes my mom coming in, and Linda, just making dumplings. And there's, like you said, only so many that we can make. So I think being transparent and kind of showing that process, whether it's like roasting coffee or processing meat or whatever, you know, as long as the customers kind of like know, they can see how hard you're working, and it kind of like adds to the product.
That's a very interesting insight, but because transparency, I think, is key. People want to see behind the scenes. It's fun, but that almost adds to like the honesty of what this is, because there's so many things on the internet now that like appear to be like, oh, we're a self-started doing this or that. Yeah. And then you like go two layers deeper and you're like, oh, this is like funded by some huge company. And it's like, there's a reason I'm seeing it on Instagram. It's because you're pouring tens of thousands of dollars into the advertising. Yeah. And you see it in coffee too, because you can just like, there's literally companies that you can contact, be like, I want this label on a coffee bag. And then I'm going to go out and start selling it. Like I'm starting the, and you're like, but it's just not quite the same because it's not, you're not bringing it from that place of kind of bring it full circle. And it's like a place of authenticity and passion that it's like, the reason I'm doing this is because it's something I care about.
Yeah. And the quality of the product always comes first, right? You know, it's customers and then the quality of your product that, you know, your reputation is in kind of like what you put on the table and what you feed people. And so we never want that to drop. As much as we want to kind of scale and think through how, like, how do we make more dumplings and get them to more people, you know, the quality of the filling and the quality of the dough that we use can't kind of fall below our standards. So that's been really difficult because there's commissary, there's like co-packers out there, you know, that say they can do dumplings or pierogies, and you talk to them and you get, you know, you get samples back and the skins are super thick and, you know, they're not to your specifications and the fillings are super small. So, you know, we've kind of like entertained those ideas, but quickly kind of, you know, cross them off the list. And, you know, it's probably going to be some kind of hybrid model where we have some kind of machines of our own and then a manufacturing process to pump out more dumplings. With some human labor involved, but yeah, we're trying to think through all those things just to, you know, get more dumplings into people's hands and people's homes.
Yeah, and that's the tough part about the co-packer situation is it's not hard to find a co-packer that will take on your business. It's hard to find one where either the minimum quantity orders aren't gigantic,
are huge,
or that you don't have enough business where they'd be willing to invest into the processes to be able to do it exactly how you want it. So then you start kind of compromising. You say, well, okay, this dough's a little thicker, but it's still solid. And then, well, this isn't quite how we do it, but it's pretty close. Yeah. And then all of a sudden at the end of it, you get it and you're like, okay. And that's where it changes the conversation where you go, you know what? Compared to this, you really should just go to the grocery store and get those dumplings because they're probably made by the same co-packer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's, it's been really eye opening because we don't come from like a manufacturing background or a food background. So meeting people in the industry, meeting these different companies that are trying to take your company to the next level, it's been pretty eye-opening what's out there. I mean, there's good eggs, there's bad eggs, there's people just out for a buck, there's people that are really willing to help. And, you know, we're coming into it with fresh eyes, and I think that's important, but it's also, you know, sifting through a lot of the bullshit and then relying on good help and finding, you know, solid friends in the industry, and I think we've fallen in with, you know, a pretty great group of people, restaurateurs and you know, people in the industry, people like Ia, people like Gustavo and Nixta, have been really great.
And that's something I hear about. That's why I love doing this podcast, because the Twin Cities food beverage scene is crazy tight. Like if
it's
amazing. Yeah. If you're doing things right and you work hard, it's, I don't know if I want to say it's not hard, because it's sometimes hard to meet people if you're just getting started. Everybody's really busy. But like, if you kind of prove yourself through just what you're making or how hard you're working, or you're just doing something really cool, once you start meeting people, they're like, oh, I want you to meet this person, I want you to meet that person. And all of a sudden you're like, you kind of, and it's kind of how we met, is I saw your collabs. I was like, oh, I know both those people. If they like, you know, if they like Peter and they like Saturday Dumpling Club, I want to meet him now. And so that's why I reached out, because I was like, these collabs, obviously he is a good friend of mine. I'm like, I want to meet this person now because of what they're doing. And so it's really cool. I think that's a good place to end this episode. I just think it's really cool to see what you've built. I'm very jealous of your story. That, like, the word of mouth and momentum you've been able to generate just from something you started doing out of your garage.
Thank you,
is so cool to see. Very jealous of your business model as I look at it. And as I drive to you to pick up your dumplings, get home and say, that was well worth the trip. Wait a second. He just got me to come to him to pick up the thing that up. And I was like, genius. But it's that lack of urgency. It's the passion that you go, we're going to make great things. People look for great things, are willing to drive for it. And if we do a great job, everybody's going to be happy, which is really cool to see.
We're trying, man. We're trying.
Best of luck. And I know you said you want to maybe ask a couple questions off mic, but I'm more than happy to help with anything I can.
We'll love that.
As long as I get some dumplings out of the whole deal.
Yeah, let's go grab a meal sometime.
I'll end it like every other episode and say, have a nice day.